highest point in Thailand.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Hello and welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, cyclists should be allowed to run red lights and roll through stop signs. Well, so says a Canadian law professor. But why? And is he right? We dive in head first.
Bit like I did into a thorn bush last week. Probably more painful. We'll also explain why there's a petition to change the route of the Tour de France, explain the latest pro cycling team transfers and news, question the Bonkers new GPS head unit that will also pump up your tyres, and much more besides.
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Tadej Pogačar has potentially the highest VO2 max ever recorded.
This is according to new research that uses available data from previous Tour de France climbs and estimates it at up to 96 millilitres per kilogram per minute. Now, this would put him at the top of the all-time list for Tour winners, ahead of Greg LeMond, three-time champion from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, what's interesting though about this stat is that VO2 max wasn't ever thought to be particularly relevant to pro cyclists, was it? Efficiency trumping oxygen capacity, but I guess in the case of Pogačar, I mean, if you can have it all.
Yeah, why not? We also learned that there was good news for a bike shop in Alaska. Speedway Cycles were reunited with a load of bikes that had been stolen from them. The bad news was they had to wait 7 years before they got them back.
Brutal, isn't it? No disc brakes, no wireless, no tubeless, no aero. Basically, they were totally worthless, weren't they? We joke. Can I just stress? We joke.
We also learned that Si seems to be able to heal relatively quickly for an old man.
I'm not an old man, but yes, thank you to our colleague Rafa, who insisted that I go and buy a special moisturiser.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah,
and then a GCN viewer, Carol, who sent both a bottle of bio oil for scars and stretch marks, and then also a balaclava, in case that didn't work. So yes, thank you, Carol.
It's quite remarkable. You should probably be wearing the balaclava until at least you get a haircut.
Thank you, mate. Yes,
it is. On the topic of that. But anyway, now this week we are talking about a very thorny topic.
Is that a pun?
Yeah, not just the bushes that Si's crashing into.
Thank you.
Not just cyclists running red lights and stop signs, but cyclists being allowed to run red lights and stop signs.
Yeah, this is thorny, okay? And we stumbled upon an opinion piece by Professor Steve Lorteau from the University of Ottawa, who specialises in urban law issues. Now, he argues in this piece that a law that treats cyclists and motorists equally is inherently biased towards the latter. So, i.e., built into the legal framework of our transport network, car drivers are essentially favoured over cyclists.
His argument is that the risks associated with those respective modes of transport are not equal. A driver running a red light can easily kill another person, whereas it is far less likely for a cyclist to do the same thing. Furthermore, cyclists benefit exponentially from efficiency savings, like not having to stop repeatedly.
Yeah, exactly. Stop signs in the US. As an Englishman, can I just say, American viewers, they do my absolute head in.
Yeah, they bamboozle me as well.
They don't bamboozle me, you just got to constantly stop. Long live the roundabout, that's what I say. But anyway, back to our Canadian professor. So he likens bikes being held to the same rules as cars, a little bit like slapping a speed limit on a pedestrian in order to treat them equally as well. So yeah, I mean, I can kind of see the point a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, let's come on to this issue of fairness, though, in a moment, because first, we should say that in some parts of the USA, it's already legal for cyclists to roll through stop signs, thanks to something called the Idaho Stop.
Yes, so this, I've learnt since Googling it, is a rule that was implemented in 1982 in Idaho, and the idea was to improve cyclist safety, and what it allows is riders to treat stop signs as yields, and then, while they do need to stop at red lights, they can then proceed through them if it's safe to do so, and by giving way to traffic that has priority.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, these rules affect 12% of the US population, so it's still not exactly widespread.
No.
But France and Belgium have something similar, where cyclists can treat red lights as yields as long as they give way to other road users.
Yeah, so this means then that a lot of the world doesn't allow for cyclists to run red lights. And the main reason, aside, I think, simply from it being like this just because of history, you know, red lights were invented and everyone was lumped in with them, is one of fairness.
Yeah. Cyclists ride on the road, therefore they should be held accountable to the same rules and regulations as everyone else. Even rules like road tax.
Road tax.
Yep, in inverted commas, because technically that isn't a thing. It's vehicle emissions duty. Does rile some people up.
Yes, that is, most car drivers need to pay an annual tax, don't they, in order to keep their cars on the roads. But cyclists don't.
Not to mention cyclists being able to skip traffic jams and legally being able to ride two abreast.
That also annoys some motorists, doesn't it? Yep. So to add, therefore, cyclists being able to run red lights is highly likely to inflame a volatile situation, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? Aside from finding stop signs in the US really annoying, I haven't ever really thought about allowing cyclists to run red lights. I guess because now when cyclists do run red lights, I find it annoying because we're not allowed to.
No, that's right. As in, the cyclists that do run red lights are breaking the rules, aren't they? And I agree. And more so previously, when people have argued in favour of cyclists running red lights, often the view is that we should be able to because we're vulnerable road users. And I've always thought that that seems like a fairly dubious reason, because traffic lights, I've assumed, are there to make it safer for everyone. However, when it's a law professor who makes the argument, I'm not going to lie, it holds a little bit more weight for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think my main issue, aside from the fact that I worry about inflaming an already volatile situation on the roads, is that I don't think people necessarily treat the rule as it's meant to be treated. I think some people regard it as being allowed to run red lights no matter what.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah. Already in London here in the UK, there are a crazy number of cyclists running red lights on there. So I was there a couple of weeks ago and I couldn't believe it. Particularly, well, there was one pedestrian crossing. It was at rush hour, so everyone was leaving work. There were about 20 of us walking across this pedestrian crossing, and this one person on a public hire bike just rode straight through the middle of us who were walking across. I mean, like, we're not a care in the world, just literally, like, boof, straight through the middle.
Yeah, but maybe people like that would be more inclined to stop at lights, like to give way to pedestrians and cars if they could roll through others because it was safe to do so then. So it's like, they're not just going to roll for every single one, they will stop when they need to, and then they know they can kind of keep moving.
I mean, I can see your point, Connor, and I appreciate some of the idea behind that Idaho stop rule in the first place was to legalise stuff that cyclists were already doing that isn't causing a problem, but I kind of also struggle to see it happening if people stop breaking a certain rule because they're then allowed to break another one.
I get, well, when I made the video about Britain's most dangerous road recently, if you saw that, I did actually interview a sustainable mobility design expert.
Crikey, that's a job title, isn't it?
Yeah, Mark Philpotts. Now, off camera, his take on red lights I found really interesting, actually. Because basically, he thought that red lights should have only ever really been designed. They only were designed for vehicles as a better way to manage traffic flow. So I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I believe it was his opinion that cyclists should never really have been totally forced into that group. Because, let's face it, roads aren't going to get gridlocked because of cyclists. They'll get gridlocked because of lots of vehicles, and traffic lights are there to manage all that flow. So, of course, there'll be junctions which are, you know, you need to stop at 100%. It's not going to be safe just to barrel through. That's definitely not what I'm saying. I'm definitely not saying you should run, or that I believe you should run through red lights and be unsafe. But I think there's plenty of examples where it's not going to benefit anyone for a cyclist to have to stop. And it's not going to be a cause for concern for a cyclist to jump a red light. I say jump because it's as if, like, that's breaking the law. But what do you think? I'm interested to see what you think.
Well, I've got to say, I can't honestly think that over the last 30-something years of riding bikes, I have been in any way hindered by having to stop at red lights, nor do I feel like my safety has been affected in any way. So for me, I don't really see the logic in allowing cyclists to roll through red lights, even if actually there are times when it'd be really nice, particularly here in the UK, turning left at a set of lights, so in most of the rest of the world, turning right. But like I say, I'm just, you know, just the rule is the rule, whatever. But when I read that opinion piece by that law professor, it struck a chord, because actually, when you look at it in black and white, actually, the road rules aren't necessarily fair if you look at it in terms of who's the vulnerable road user, who's the one causing the biggest risk. So yeah, I kind of, I don't think it needs changing, but I wouldn't be averse to it changing.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of a similar opinion to you. Like I'm never going to obviously advocate for people to suddenly start jumping red lights, nor do I think that's what you should be doing. I think where my opinion is that cyclists running red lights is so often used as a way to be negative towards cyclists, and it's sometimes such a big deal is made of it. And of course, there are instances where you, like, 100% cyclists are in the wrong. They've run a red light, and something's happened, and that's bad.
Yeah.
But I think looking at this and also speaking about it, it's also something which we, I think, people get like unfairly hung up on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yeah.
And you see it around the roads, like here where we're based, there's actually a dual traffic light system. So you get a light for the bike and a light for the car. The bike goes first as a way of getting ahead of the traffic. And so often I'll get the green light for the bike, I'm allowed to go, and then a car will be new, a driver will be new, they won't know the system, and then they'll beep you and be like, what are you doing? And it's like, it's just a way to jump on cyclists and give them grief.
Yeah. Yeah, but then if they did change the rules, would that solve that, or would it just, as we talked about earlier, just inflame the situation? Yeah. I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? I'd be super interested to hear your thoughts on this. Of course, as always, do you think that the Idaho stop rule should be rolled out in whatever country, state, city you live in? Or do you think it's there, the rules of the road, for a very good reason? Get involved in the comments section down below. I think we should probably revisit this next week.
Yeah.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now. I'm going to start actually with news of another opinion piece, but this time from the Fresno Bee, in California. And it really caught my eye, okay, because the article starts with a hard-hitting line. The last time a shark killed a California resident was 2 years ago. By contrast, cars kill Californians every 2 hours on average. Which makes you think, doesn't it? What lengths would authorities go to if 12 people a day were killed by sharks?
So true. The article is ultimately about a new California bill which would introduce hardware to stop convicted speeders from being able to travel above the speed limit. Basically pointing out that one of the biggest causes of road fatalities is speed, and that could be stopped within weeks if anyone actually gave a shit. The bill is aiming to trial the tech, which can limit your speed to 10 mile an hour above the speed limit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy to think that this tech exists that could, like, literally solve one of the biggest problems facing, I mean, not just on the roads, is it? Like, the amount of people that die every year because of road accidents is massive. And yet there is not, there's just no appetite for it, is there?
I don't understand. And also the argument for, like, well, maybe sometimes it's a situation you need a bit of speed to avoid something, I don't know. But you're still able to go 10 mile an hour over the speed limit. It's plenty enough.
And yeah.
We're talking about people who are constantly speeding to ridiculous numbers. I mean, I don't understand why it's not been implemented.
Yeah. I saw a headline whilst we were looking at stuff for the show. Someone in Atlanta, in Georgia, was caught doing 90 in a 30, and they hit someone. And obviously, if you hit someone at 90 mile an hour, there's only one outcome, isn't there? Cute, like, I don't know, absolutely crackers. Right.
Evidence is mounting, Si, for what happens when towns and cities restrict vehicle access to certain streets. And in the latest research, this time from Madrid, they observed a 9.5% boost to retail spending.
9.5% boost to retail spending from less cars. Okay. It's funny, because the opposite, i.e. a reduction in spending, is often forecast by people worrying about restrictions to car use being implemented. In fact, in the city I live in Bristol, protests against blocking off a 100-metre-long stretch of road had people carrying coffins because they feared that their area would die.
Did it?
No, not yet, anyway.
And when did the protests happen?
About 5 years ago.
Hmm.
And it's now a permanent restriction because actually all the businesses that protested realised that it was really good for the area because they've got to do something against online shopping, and that might be just making the street that you've got your shop on really nice. Anyway, I feel like we've got on our high horses today, Connor. Let us move on, shall we?
Move off the high horse. I'm always on a high horse. It's high up.
Fair point, yeah.
Talking about getting to cities, around cities by bike, though. Delivery Service Evri in the UK announced it will be expanding its electric cargo fleet, part of a £19 million UK pound investment. And by the end of the year, they should have 99 e-cargo bikes for deliveries, which is quite a lot. They reckon it will be the largest such fleet in the UK.
Yeah, and when we say e-cargo bikes, by the way, these are the Vox-style ones. I don't think they're actually Vox, are they? But the Vox-style. So when we say bike, a lot of people say, that's not a bike, it's a quad.
E-pedal car.
Yeah, four-wheeled electrically assisted pedal vehicle. But anyway, I'm here for that. I thought that thing was absolutely wicked.
I love that. I love it.
100%. Right. Next up, back to kind of more sort of, well, cycling specific topics. This we spotted over on Road CC, and they found it on Kickstarter. It is, I think, absolutely bonkers. So it's claimed to be a 6-in-1 bike computer, and we're not talking about 6 different software features. Oh no. If this comes to fruition, it'll be a GPS device, a 1,000 lumen light, which you can kind of see, okay, well, it's a head unit, so that would work. But then it's also a pump, an electric bike pump. It will pump up your tyres. What on earth is that about? I mean, that's only, what, 3 features? God knows what the other 3 are.
Yeah, well, I looked at it. So it's also an AI device. I don't know what that means. Maybe you can talk to Gemini as you're riding and figure out what the weather's going to do.
What's the meaning of life?
Yeah.
Well, turn left, but...
So that's also got a Bluetooth speaker.
Okay,
and
nice.
And a bike horn. And a 7-day battery life to charge it, like power it all.
I don't know about you, mate, but I quite like it when things are really good at doing one thing well. A bit like a knife. I don't need my knife to be a Bluetooth speaker when I'm in the kitchen chopping vegetables. I just want it to be a really flipping good knife. And I feel a little bit like I want the same thing from my GPS head unit.
But imagine the day when someone has a puncture on the group ride and you just go, wait a minute. Check me out. I'm pumping that bad boy up.
Mate, call me old school, but even when you whip out your Topeak, whatever it is, and pump it up, and that's a legit electric pump, I've still stood there with a mini pump going, like, I'm capable of pumping up my own tyre. Like, I genuinely.
Well, if you don't know, you can ask Gemini how to do it.
Well, good point. Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, Kickstarter, the Kickstarter funding hasn't started just yet, so watch this space. Might be too good to be true. We don't know. Also, details on the weight of it haven't been stated.
Well, yeah. I mean, potentially, if you can remove 6 items from your bike and replace it with 1, maybe it'll be all right, even if it weighs 5 kilos. Moving on. I think all of us are pretty excited about next year's Tour de France route, particularly the double header on Alpe d'Huez. So that's 2 days it's finishing on Alpe d'Huez, isn't it? Tantalising prospect, but it turns out that not everyone is happy about the route. And we're not talking about Jonas Vingegaard, are we? This is a petition with over 6,000 signatures doing the rounds, asking for the ascent of the Col de Sirene on the race's penultimate day to be cancelled.
Yeah, so the crux of the reason for this is that the petitioners argue that nature shouldn't be a stadium, with the Col de Sirene usually being home to a number of fragile animal species and nesting ground. The road itself, I actually didn't know this, the road's closed 8 months of the year too.
All right.
So most traffic takes the form of walkers on a pretty quiet hiking trail close to the road. I don't know, it does make you think when you read this, we get caught up in the race and the spectacle and forget to think about potential impacts from massive race apparatus landing down for the day.
The petition also notes how much the main Alpe d'Huez climb has changed and developed over the years, particularly since cycling first started going there. I believe Fausto Coppi, 1952.
There we go.
Is that right? Yeah.
Bring out the facts.
Now, I would argue that that is not due to cycling, the development of Alpe d'Huez. I mean, it's mainly ski infrastructure.
I think it's mostly ski, and cycling has kind of piggybacked that so it's become an easy, good destination to finish a tour stage on. I think it's obviously the ski development which has seen Huez, the town at the top of Alpe d'Huez, really kind of balloon.
Yeah, a bit of mountain bikers as well.
Yeah.
I can see why you wouldn't want them cluttering up your town or your village, because they're fairly stinky most of the time, aren't they?
But I think the petitioners have highlighted that in their description because they're worried the Col de Sirene would go down a similar route. I don't know if that would be the case. I don't know what you think. I mean, I really think it's a worthwhile thing to highlight and just be really mindful of, and how we can try and be more aware of where we're taking races.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good point, right? But no one's going to go and build a ski lift on the Col de Sirene because the Tour de France goes up there this year, right? But equally, if 1 million fans is going to ruin the area, then I could see why the tour might restrict spectators. Because it's done that before, hasn't it? There have been stretches of road where you're not allowed to spectate on.
That's it.
And you don't need to, right? So 99% of people watch the race on TV, so it's a weird lack of atmosphere, but you could still watch it and, you know. I don't know. I guess it's a wider discussion, isn't it? Should the Alps and other places be, you know, kept wild and serene for nature, or is it okay if we were to go up there and have fun? And
it's a hard balance because at the same time, the exposure that these places get from a cycling race really highlights them and allows them to be kind of like to be seen and hopefully to be protected in the future as a result.
Well, also, you could argue that not many people would be able to live in the Alps were it not for tourism, because agriculture is, you know, not as valuable there as it once was. And so all of the local people, if you take tourism out, there's not all that much left, is there, in terms of jobs and things? I don't know. God, we've got a bit serious again, haven't we?
Yeah. A bit more serious news as well, because there's been quite a lot of movement in pro cycling in terms of teams, transfers. The main one being that IPT, the World Tour squad, which was really kind of in dire straits at the end of this year for
Israel Premier Tech.
It looks like they have changed ownership. So it's hard to tell if this has been a sale or how this has happened. Like, we're kind of presuming it's a sale, but it's changing to a Swiss license. And they've potentially been bought out by a group called NSN Cycling, or Never Say Never Cycling, which is kind of part owned by Barcelona football legend Iniesta. So the team, they've come on and bought the squad, and also a Swiss investment firm called Stoneweg.
Yes. Neither have been around for very long, have they, those two companies?
No.
So, yeah, it'd be very interesting. There's also not much news in terms of what bikes they're riding, because Factor have pulled out. I think the rumour is they're Scots.
That's it.
But anyway, a lot of movement this year in cycling pro teams, and not much time left for everything to sort itself out.
A few rumours that Binim Grimai will now sign for the squad as well that have been circulating, although these are unconfirmed as of filming.
You mean Daniel Benson's posted it on his Substack?
Yeah, well, I know various other people have as well. Well, it was really confusing because in the kind of like few of the press releases, it like some said that he was and then some didn't. Who knows?
Who knows? All will be
revealed. Everything is fluid.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last story then. We often talk about infrastructure, cycling infrastructure on GCN, don't we? Most of the time, we talk about how nice it would be to be Dutch, basically, when it comes to cycling and motor transport. Anyway, the latest move by the Dutch government rather proves our point, because they have just earmarked €1 billion for the creation of yet more cycling infrastructure, linking new builds and home developments nationwide.
A billion. That's incredible.
Isn't it just?
Absolutely incredible.
Amazing. But, you know, fair enough, I guess. Like, they can see that it works, and already, I can't remember what percentage of the population ride bikes for transport, so kind of might as well,
yeah,
basically. Right, just before we move on, our Black Friday sale is now live. So if you've got a minute, do head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
It's the best Black Friday sale we've ever had. So up to 50% off everywhere, everything. So grab a bargain, why can't, for yourself or others, so it can just be for yourself.
I mean, yeah, but yeah, well, yes. Buy it for yourself, first and foremost, because then you're guaranteed to get what you want. But yes, maybe you have a lucky loved one who might benefit from your generosity.
We've got a Christmas tree up already.
Have you actually?
Yeah. It wasn't my decision. But it's up. The lights are up. Christmas, everybody. Let's get into it.
Happy Christmas. Just call me Scrooge, but I think that's about 3 weeks too early for my take. Now, some big news. We've got a competition running, starting today until the 5th of December, which would be a date where you could conceivably put up a Christmas tree and it'd be appropriate. Anyway, this is a chance to win one of three Topeak bike packing bundles, okay? This is presumably getting you quite excited, isn't
it? Oh, I love this,
right on the street. And this is their newest setup, to be precise. So this is a Zyrac with a dry bag and a U-shell, which I think you might need to explain, Connor.
I love these. Go I'm on. Glad you set me up this. So basically, this is like an axle or a frame-mounted rack, which allows a really like secure fit for your baggage, your gear, fits most bike too, because when it goes on a through axle. And
we're talking like a pannier rack, basically.
Basically like one of these modern day pannier racks.
Modern day pannier
racks are making a good resurgence at the moment, I tell you.
There's going to be a lot of people in the comment section pleased
killing
to hear
me
that.
For it.
No, they'd be pleased to hear it because they've been talking about panniers being...
Well, everyone gives me stick whenever I say bike packers. It's like, oh, bike packers existed for years, which it has. But the racks are coming back.
Does that mean you're going to have to call it cycle touring if you've got a pannier rack on?
I'm all for calling it cycle touring.
Okay, all right, anyway. And then the dry bag, I think I know what that is. What on earth is a U-shell?
So I think that's like the shell that goes on top of the rack. And it's quite cool, actually, because you can like clip it on and off really quick.
So it's
quite, quite nice. So you can have your dry bag on the rack and then you just clip it off, take it with you without having to faff around with straps or anything.
That's cool. All right, well, yeah. So three bundles available, and I can imagine you'll be seeing them on Connor's bike as well very soon for just a general GCN video about riding for like a short period of time.
When I decided to, I was way up how much sticks I was going to get me for doing it when I turned up at the shoot with all my gubbins. I was just going to do it anyway.
If you turn with a pannier rack on like a kind of, you know, how to ride as fast as you can for 10 miles. Anyway, never mind. We'll continue this debate off screen. To enter, just click the link in the description beneath this video. And if you want, you can also read the terms and conditions down there as well.
Yeah. Hack forward / Bodge.
That's a seamless segue, isn't it?
Yeah,
nicely done, mate. Right, first up, we've got this one sent in from Juan Lucena, a repurposed tandem. Okay, I think you like this. I bought a tandem a few weeks ago for my girlfriend. That's a disaster waiting to happen, isn't it? Trying to lure a non-cycling partner. Well, I say non-cycling, that's an assumption, actually, on my part. Maybe she really loves the fact that they've got a tandem. Anyway.
No one will fit on a tandem with me, so I've saved myself that one.
Well, poor old Hank had to, didn't he, at one point?
Yeah, well, I made him ride. I didn't fit on his tandem.
Anyway, right. So, Juan says, after some rebuilding, we did a few trips on it, including a full week of bike packing, but then it wasn't used for a very long time. Then we had kids, and I thought about repurposing it into a long-tail cargo bike. I ride my kids every day to school, and they kind of like it. We live in Copenhagen, so you can see every kind of bike around the city, but it still feels very unique, and we get plenty of smiles and looks on a daily basis. I actually think that is a wicked use of a tandem.
I love this. I don't know why I've never thought about doing this before.
Yeah, I mean, you have effectively got yourself a bargain long-tail cargo bike, haven't you?
That's amazing. That is 100% a hack from me.
Yeah, so for anyone listening to the GCN show today as a podcast, I mean, it literally is a tandem, but then on the back, instead of one seat, you've got two kid seats on there instead.
There's even a kickstand and two pannier racks.
Brilliant.
So there's cargo space. This is one of the first, like, hacks I've seen where I'm like, I am going to do this at one point in my life.
Yeah, I think that's wicked. And do you know what I also like? I like the fact that his pedals and his stem are colour coordinated.
Amazing.
In lime green, just as a nice finishing touch. I think that's absolutely amazing. So yeah, full blown hack from me.
Yeah, definite hack from me.
All right.
Love it.
What's up next?
This has been sent in by Ernie Zed, the mother of all hacks.
Okay, hang on a minute. We're the judges.
So, the cassette on my commuter bike wore out a bit too much over 2 years due to the commuter bike negligence. I got a new cassette, but boy, was the old one stuck. I greased the splines when putting on the original, but even with two people, this one was not budging. I tried for 3 evenings to take it off. 3 evenings. Whoa. Oh, that's when it gets personal. When you're like, I am locked into this.
What a waste of time.
The more you invest, the harder it gets. Damaged the cassette tool as well. I was on the verge of going to my local bike shop.
I think I might have gone there after one evening, personally.
But then I found that one of my spanners is just the right size to fit over the tool. Still in a luck, this led me to the idea of using the inner tube hack method for a stuck pedal removal. And behold, after a few attempts and an extra push, it came loose. At first, I wasn't sure if it was loose or something broke due to the noise, but I'm glad watching the GCN show for many years has come in handy.
To be fair, if that worked, then it is possibly the mother of all hacks. So this inner tube hack, again, for podcast listeners, is basically where you've got two tools, haven't you, that need squeezing together. So in this case, you've got your chain whip and the cassette tool, and then you wind an old inner tube round, and every time you wind it tighter and tighter and tighter, and it's basically exerting force, squeezing the two together. And I guess once you've wound it so many times, it's actually pretty blooming strong.
That's a good hack.
That is
to make
that
work on that.
So I've tried to do it on a pair of cranks before. For some reason, the new SRAM cranks, newish SRAM cranks, have a tendency to get a little bit stuck on there. And so people have often used it for those. It didn't work for me. But anyway, if it does work, maybe we need to get back on it.
Yeah.
All right, watch this space. We'll give it a try. But in the meantime, hack.
I used to just kick it. Hack, yeah, hack for me.
Oh God! The trouble is, I think you're telling the truth. Right, Dimitar Lukarski. We think, by the way, that is your name. You didn't put anything in the GCN uploader to say so, but anyway, sleek garage opener integration on my Cannondale. So let's have a quick look at this movie.
Oh, this is cool. I think we'll have to see where we're going here.
No, surely they're teasing us. Surely there's someone inside operating the actual...
No, I think he's done it.
Hang on a minute.
I think he's done it.
Opening the garage door was cutting into my ride time. Since my Cannondale Super 6 has wireless shifting, the down tube cable ports were empty. I bought a port cover with a hole, installed a button, and soldered it directly to a stripped down garage opener PCB inside the frame.
Yeah, it's done
a
it.
Bit of glue keeps it secure. Oh my goodness me, that could well be the greatest hack of all time. Like, I do not own a garage, let alone one with an electric opener, but that is cool as...
That is cool. That is like ultimate thug life, just cruising up to your garage and pressing your button, running straight in without stopping.
Mind blown. Mind blown. So Dimitar Lukarski, if that is you, then, I mean, my hat is taken off.
Yeah, fair play.
And if it's not you, apologies, I don't know who it was. Which is a shame, because it was the greatest hack of all time. Oh, well, all right. Finally, Connor, who have we got?
We have got Camp Laura. Seriously, not a bodge. Okay, bold claims, but let's get into it. There's a lot to unpick here. So, ever notice how expensive indoor cycling desks are? The random desks hiding in your basement are shorter than your front tyre. Well, if you have two wood screws, a few zip ties...
Bodge.
And three chunks of wood, you can turn the dinky desk into an impressive training platform upon which to watch cycling shorts while riding. Hint for judges, please look at the post-it note with not at all temporary GCN branding.
All right, you're trying to influence us. I see what you're doing, and I mean, I am influenced. If you stick a sticker on that says GCN rules, I'm all yours.
Zip ties are involved, but I think we should let that go.
So basically, what we're looking at here is a basic desk that is mounted on two blocks of wood that have been screwed together and then zip tied onto the top. I mean, it looks so shonky.
I'm sorry. I really want to give it a hack, but I think this is a bit of a bodge.
I think
it's a total bodge job.
You've got a laptop perched on top of something that looks like it might just accidentally topple over at any second. It's got to be a bodge, surely.
Oh, yeah. I think all that could happen is you get a bit over enthusiastic in a sprint, and that front wheel just nodges that wood, and then everything goes toppling.
Yeah.
I think that bookcase in the background.
Yeah,
repurpose that, because I'm sure that'll be high. Get the computer on.
Okay,
there.
So your sticker is a hack.
That's a hack.
Rest of it is a bodge. Okay, all right. Well, some highs and lows this week, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah. Some big highs and some lows.
Some low lows. Yeah, but keep them coming in as always. We thrive on your hacks and bodges that you keep sending in. So do make sure you continue to do so. It's time now for caption competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we will give you in just 1 second after we've handled the not-so-small matter of last week's results.
Yep. Drum roll, please. This was a photo of Jonas Vingegaard at the... is it Saitama career?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Not sure what he's wearing, but the caption that wins this one has been sent in by SMAC5479. Yes, I know, but it's seriously better looking than our previous time trial helmet.
To be fair, we just need a picture of his time trial helmet to compare the two. And actually, you know what? As well as being funny, it's also true.
Yeah, It actually kind of is true.
Do you know what? I met the inventor of the Specialized head condom the other week at the Ruler Bike Show, and he didn't look remotely embarrassed to have invented it at all.
Really?
Yeah, I'd say he was almost proud.
Oh, there you go.
I know. I mean, it was all I could do to not have a go at the lad. But anyway, because he was a lad, he didn't look particularly old.
You got to own it.
I mean, yeah, clearly. I mean, he obviously knows how fast it is, and that's fine. But there was me thinking that you've brought the sport into disrepute. But anyway, we've segued. This week's photo is this genius picture of Thibaut Nais winning a recent, I can't remember what cross league it was.
Tabor.
No, that's not Tabor, is it?
Not Tabor?
No, I don't think so. That was the, was it an exact cross from a couple of weeks back? I was watching it just the other day. Blooming good race. Anyway, can I get started?
Come on then.
Thibaut, duck! Anyway, see what you can do. The fact that there is a, 20-foot-high duck looming in the background. The world's your oyster with that one, isn't it?
It does look like it's coming for him.
It does, yeah. Either that or I was thinking it's like a halo. Right, anyway, do your worst. We'll pick a winner next week. Okay, we're going to go through some of our favourite comments that you've been leaving under last week's GCN videos. I think we say this a lot, but we really do flipping love the comments. I actually, after last week's GCN show, which was about, essentially, I'm an idiot and I've ruined my face, I sort of gave my phone to my wife, who, her favourite thing, she never watches a second of GCN, but she flipping loves reading the comments. So she pauses the video immediately and scrolls through the comments, absolutely laughing her head off. So thank you very much for for all of those. But yeah, there were some loads of cool comments actually last week where Dan and I were effectively arguing about whether or not you should back off sometimes in order to stay safe or just enjoy cycling and sod the consequences. And a lot of people agreed with me. Yes!
I back off all the time.
Well, yeah, you say that, but you're the fastest of us on road descents.
Am I?
Yeah. So whereas you might back off in some places, I wouldn't want to follow you down an alpine descent. Or at least I would, but I would be a bit, I'd be out of my comfort zone.
I think I realise I'm at an advantage with my weight and I'm like, I'm just going to press the advantage.
It's just wherever your comfort zone is, isn't it? It's like you might think you're backing off, but actually you're still like ton faster than anyone else.
Yeah. You've got to get your thrill somewhere.
Exactly.
You've got to get your thrill somewhere.
Yeah, anyway, Warhammer WH, I agree with Si. Both of you are in, you gentlemen are in your early to mid-40s. Far from being old. There you go. You get really old when you give up or purposefully slow down because you tell yourself, I can't do this because I'm too old. I'm in my 60s and will not stop challenging myself just for a number. Amen, Warhammer. I like that.
Yeah, nice one.
I'm here for that.
No Skills Dad 5504 said, I'm there with you, Si. In the words of Hunter S. Thompson, life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside in a cloud of smoke, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, wow, what a ride.
I'm here for that as well.
I like that.
Amen, No Skills Dad and Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, for
sure. That's very cool indeed. Some great comments under your winter sucks for riding, but you like it anyway, Vid?
Yep, and Drift Sig said, talking about winter riding, apparently not wearing gloves while riding, clear blue skies, dry tarmac, not a spot of wind, looks like a summer's day. GCN riders should absolutely visit us in a colder climate. Myself, personally, waiting for enough snow to fall to justify getting my fat bike out instead of my grab bike. I totally agree with you. I must admit, it looked a lot warmer than it was that day. It was only 4 degrees. And I know that's still pretty balmy for most of you around the world.
I think we said last week that Connor elected not to film on the day that he was supposed to film because it was too minging. And then
I still would have liked to have ridden in the minging day, but I didn't want to ruin the camera.
Okay. I mean, to be fair, we have this discussion every year since the beginning of GCN. British winters might not look bad on paper, but if you've never experienced damp cold, you have no idea how miserable it can be.
Yeah, I've just bought a dehumidifier. Just gone for it.
It's a huge one that's going to solve all of the UK's problems. My laptop's having a bit of a moment, Connor. What's
okay,
next?
Yeah, no, we've got a few more comments been sent in. This one by BlueJayWay66. I'm in Canada. I've got absolutely no choice but to deal with it. People look at me like I'm crazy with studded tyres, good clothing, especially the help of local authorities for the maintenance of cycling paths. It is doable. Sometimes it's even more fun. And yeah, I'm crazy too.
There you go. Nice.
I really like to experience riding somewhere that's that cold. That Dawn Patrol ride, which I highlighted, I just think it is so cool. We've got 5:40 a.m. every week in the middle of winter in Norway. I just think it's incredible. And there's a good group of them as well getting out.
So yeah, that is pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah. Well, you're more than welcome on my weekly cyclocross ride. 7:15, mate. Rain or shine.
I'm dreaming for that. The problem is I'm up with the whole house at like 5 a.m. at the moment, so that's quite late for me.
Well, by the time you've ridden over, you'll have to start at 6.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Okay.
Okay, what else, mate? My laptop really has given up the ghost.
Plenty of comments, actually, under your video from Bolivia, your film, I should say, because it was absolutely amazing. I really enjoyed watching it.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah, great one. I loved some of the... My favourite comment was the Brazilian spider. That's one scene I would never have been able to film myself because I just would not have been able to keep a straight face. But yeah, loads of comments. Joe Station 1 sent this one in. Absolutely GTN's finest work, cinematography and soundtrack are worthy of a Netflix production. Congratulations. Everyone involved should be extremely proud of the part they played in this. Mustn't forget the sponsors of GTN as it's their sponsorship that makes this free content possible.
Yeah, that's cool, actually. I really appreciate that little... bit on the end of that comment, because it is 100%. Well, not 100%, because obviously by watching you are supporting the channel as well, but we literally couldn't do what we do without the sponsors. So in that case, it was Ruvi and Hover Air, plus all of our regular channel sponsors like Pinarello, Princeton, Topeak, Wahoo, the list goes on, doesn't it?
50mm Pirelli tyres.
Yeah.
Looks like you needed those as well.
Lifesavers. Absolute lifesavers.
I was looking at the mud, and Darth Vader's also said here, I can't wait to ride some Ruvi. My wife will shower me with mud and water constantly to simulate the experience you both had. For the altitude simulation with low air pressure, I probably have my head in a plastic bag. We don't advise that, but we get the picture.
Oh my God. Right. And then change of gear, actually. Dan's great investigative piece about pro cycling safety and specifically why there's so many deaths in pro racing at the minute. What is from Polaris 518, an astounding cycling documentary. I have no idea what's happened at GCN's management, but someone is or are making splendid decisions and choices regarding topics, personnel, scripting and editing. This really might be a game-changing documentary. So there we go. Well, it was really good. If you've not seen it, 100%, you've got to go over there, check it out. Also, Bolivia, if you've not seen that, make sure that one goes on your TV. So that's one to enjoy on the big screen. Dan promised that we'd be putting up the full unedited interview with UCI president David Le Partinon. So that one is going up on GCN Racing on Wednesday this week. So make sure you head over there and check that one out. Because the unedited interview is super interesting as well, isn't it?
I think. Yeah, for sure.
I'd be interested to know what people think about Le Partinon, actually. I think he makes a compelling case, actually, and he's in an impossible position, but that's my thoughts.
Yeah. We've got plenty more coming up on the channel, though, aside from that. So on Thursday, we've got What We Do on Zwift.
Yes.
Which I'm interested to share with you all.
Basically, yeah. This is after telling you all how to do things on Zwift for years, and we realised that we've never actually said what we specifically do on Zwift, because we all do different things, weirdly, don't we?
Yeah, Ollie's criticised me because he said I took the concept and basically did MTV Cribs in my house, which I dispute, but you can judge yourselves.
That's it, yes. Ollie said that he has condensed his down to several minutes of pure hard facts and data. So, you know, it's fitting, isn't it, the pair of you? And then what else we've got coming up? Oh, yeah, Saturday. This is the Super Nerds Team Time Trial Challenge, where we tried to break a landmark UK time trial record, albeit with three of us instead of the one.
Yeah.
Basically. And then on Sunday, I think you've been waiting eagerly for this one. This is the update on Dan's 12 months fitness journey. So how's he doing 12 months after his... initial midlife crisis year came to an end.
Yeah,
I'm quite looking forward to
it. He's absolutely smashing it. I saw a photo of the test he did. He's looking so fit.
He was looking quite lean and ripped, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And also not quite as twig-like as he used to.
No. Wouldn't like to go in a boxing match with him, put it that way.
No, I don't think I would either, actually. Yeah. God, we said. I mean, you'd probably be all right. You've got the reach on him.
I've just got the height advantage, not going to reach me.
Well, that's what, but you know, you could do that thing with like little kids where you just hold his head and then he wouldn't be able to reach you.
We've segued a lot in this show, haven't we?
We have indeed. That brings us to the end of the feature length GCN show. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. Hit the thumbs up button if you have. Remember to get involved in the debate about whether or not cyclists should be allowed to run red lights and whether or not it's for our safety if we do so. We better go because it's about 9:30 at night, isn't it?
Thanks for watching, all.